are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
Holding our police accountable that are continuing to commit misconduct, and it's holding our city accountable for continuing to approve mass surveillance, which connect, you know, just a pathway for ICE raids and, you know, a pathway for more punitive measures against protesters and giving, you know, organizations like Palantir and whatnot, more power as well. So that's my platform, and I am the pro-Palestine activist.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, a union town.
Good morning and welcome to another working week. This is KPFK's Working Voices. And filling in for Joy Alla, who's on vacation, I'm your host this morning, Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr, with my co-host this week, well-known LA activist Reggie Wong. And in this morning's show, Steve Zeltzer's Labor Media brings us a discussion of California Teamsters about AI and union transparency. Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United has an interview with LA mental health advocate Emily Wu Truong. Pete Ross presents another In Their Own Words interview with LA City Attorney candidate Ada Shuri, and I have the latest Working Voices update. So all this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
In our first offering this morning, Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel speaks with California Teamsters on a statewide panel to talk about the struggle for union democracy and transparency, along with the struggle to deal with AI and robotics.
This is Steve Zeltzer with Workweek, and we're going to be talking about the whole issue of AI and the future of workers, particularly Teamsters and other workers, as well as the issue of democracy. And the reason that we are connecting these two issues is they're both actually existential for working people. If we don't have democracy in our union to discuss and debate our issues in a democratic way, we're not going to be able to confront attacks that we face, including artificial intelligence. And what we can see today is that every worker, not just in the Teamsters, but in this country, is threatened. Their jobs are threatened, their lives are threatened, their future is threatened with the introduction of AI. Because the techno billionaires who run the AI want to use it to get rid of us, all of us. And unless we're organized and educated about how this technology is being introduced, how to defend ourselves, we are not going to be able to survive as a working class and certainly as a union. And that is one of the reasons we're having this event. The other issue of democracy, and the issue of democracy is not just an issue for union workers, it's for all workers. And one of the things about the labor movement, unfortunately, is that many unions are top-down corporate. We need a democratic trade union movement where all workers can participate, whatever their points of view. They can have discussion and debate, and they can learn from each other. And really, that's what we have to do. Working people have to learn from each other, have to have a democratic structure that allows us to communicate and build solidarity. And this is why we are having this meeting tonight and to discuss these issues. We're also trying to reach out to those government officials who are responsible for enforcing the law, because I think some of the members here of the Teamsters is going to raise the issue of accountability, the expectation and the demand that our unions be run democratically and there not be flagrant violations of our bylaws and our rules to prevent democracy. So I first want to introduce our first speaker, Rosemary Staronsky, also known to other Teamsters as the Tug and the Singing Tug Driver, a proud 25-year Teamster of Local 63, and has spent her career fighting tirelessly for rank-and-file members on the shop floor in union elections and for strong contract language. She has a great passion for the Teamsters and wants every member to proudly say that they are proud to be a Teamster. Welcome, Rosemary.
Good evening. My name is Rosemary Staronsky, and I am a proud Teamster member with 25 years of dedicated service. Throughout my career, I have been committed to fighting for the rights of rank-and-file members. It is truly an honor to be here today alongside these remarkable Teamsters to explain why we have united in our efforts to combat union corruption and restore integrity, fairness, and honest elections for all members. My involvement in the union elections began in 2010 during the pivotal contest between Dan Kane and Randy Kamak. That experience opened my eyes to the lack of integrity, fairness, and honesty that can threaten the very core of our union elections. My determination to create meaningful change never faltered. In 2013, I made the decision to run for local office, this time as part of the No Health Care Cut slate. I was proud to stand alongside other dedicated Teamsters who also aspired to bring positive transformation to our local. Over the years, my advocacy extended beyond the local as I continued to push for improvements within the International Brotherhood of Teamsters and our Constitution. I also fought persistently to strengthen contract language for all members in the Western UPS supplement contract. Throughout these efforts, my resolve has remained steadfast, and I am unwavering in my dedication to the Teamster members and the ongoing fight for reform. I firmly believe that every member should have an unwavering faith in our union. Every Teamster should feel pride and have confidence in their leadership and the voting process, whether it be in a local union election, IBT election, or contract votes. The democratic process, as protected by our local bylaws and the IBT Constitution, must be upheld and safeguarded by both our elected leaders and the government officials who oversee it. Many of you are aware that Unilect was not in good standing with the California State Tax Franchise Board for 18 months. This situation cast doubt on the legitimacy of every local and delegate election conducted by them from April 2024 to January 2026. As we face the rapid advancement of artificial intelligence, it is crucial to ask what actions are being taken at both the local and IBT levels, as well as legislative efforts to address these changes. While we know we cannot stop AI, it is essential to regulate its implementation to prevent the widespread loss of union jobs it threatens. At UPS alone, we are expected to lose another 30,000 hardworking Teamsters this year, following a loss of 20,000 jobs last year. Unfortunately, the threat does not end there. We could see up to 100,000 Teamster jobs eliminated by 2030. These are not exaggerations. We, the members, must take a stand and reclaim our union. It is time to educate ourselves, get involved, and demand action. Waiting until tomorrow will be too late. Automation and AI are already threatening jobs across every Teamster industry and craft. We can no longer afford to remain idle. We must hold our Teamsters accountable or vote them out. We are here today to urge all of you to join us in this fight. We cannot succeed alone. The Teamsters have a proud history of standing up to corruption and corporate greed, but regrettably, that same kind of greed has infiltrated our beloved union. There are several key actions we ask of you today to support this cause. Number one, if you are a member of Local 63, Local 542, Local 396, or Local 952, we implore you to vote for the delegate slates that support fair elections. Number two, stay engaged and informed. Do not wait until your job is at risk to become involved. The threat of AI is real and advancing rapidly. Understand how it might affect you and learn what we can do to collectively address it. Number three, attend your membership meetings and actively participate. Challenge your leadership with questions about AI and their strategies to address it. Find out whether your local is taking action and how you can get involved. Educate yourself at the upcoming IBT election. Make plans to attend the Teamster Convention taking place June 14th through the 18th in Las Vegas. Any Teamster can attend. All you need to do is register. Consider going with fellow Teamsters to share the cost. And don't miss this opportunity to witness how the delegates you are electing into office vote on the constitutional changes and nominate the future of the IBT Executive Board. Follow the Fearless Slate online at befearless.org. For some members, today marks the beginning of this fight. For others, it is the continuation of a long-standing struggle. On behalf of the Power for All Slate, we pledge never to stop until every member has access to fair, honest elections and leadership that is free from corruption and truly advocates for every rank and file member. Solidarity.
Thank you, Rosemary. One of the things that we talked about earlier is AI and the strike that I covered of the SAG-AFTRA and writers was, for many of the members who I interviewed, says an existential crisis of AI. And this existential crisis is something that cannot be solved just by one company, by one union and one industry. It requires all workers together. So our next speaker that is joining us is Michael Sparks. He's a rank and file member of Teamsters Local 399 of the Motion Picture Teamsters out of Hollywood, California. Welcome, Michael.
I'd like to thank you for providing us a platform to speak about not only AI, but the democratic process in our election system of the Teamsters, because unfortunately, right now on the West Coast, in the 2025 election process, we've discovered that the company that was hired to do our election, Unelect, was not even qualified to be operating and doing business in the state of California since April of 2024. When this coalition reached out to me and invited me to come discuss the election process that I experienced and that they also experienced, there was a lot of inconsistencies from see-through secret ballot envelopes that the members could put up to the light and see how a member voted, to members reaching out to the election company that never received their ballots after numerous calls trying to get a ballot sent to them. The PO boxes that were provided by the local unions to hold the ballots once the members return them in the mail, the union in some cases had access to those PO boxes, and the election company was not the only one that was able to access those. After deliberating with this coalition, we started to do an investigation into Unelect ourselves, and we found a lot of inconsistencies. Let's start with the addresses that are listed on Google for this company. After a simple internet search, there's about four addresses that come up, and not one of those addresses was a legitimate brick and mortar building that Unelect was currently occupying at that time. And this is a company that is making millions of dollars off of the elections that the Teamsters are running on the West Coast. And you have members of many different locals saying that this election system in 2025 and the upcoming delegate election that is taking place right now should not be overseen by Unelect. Yet it's falling on deaf ears from our locals to our joint councils and to the international itself. Unfortunately, at this time, we've also been reaching out to our attorney general in the great state of California, Rob Bonta. Our cries and protests have been falling on deaf ears at that juncture, too. And you would think in a union that claims it's the most democratic union in the country, we wouldn't have to struggle this hard for fair elections. You know, even this machine that they're using to count the ballots is a 25-year-old machine that is easily manipulated by the gentleman that is sitting at the computer. You know, there are a lot of inconsistencies with these election process that Unelect has ran. And, you know, just this week, I heard those the general president, the president of Joint Council 42, and my very own secretary treasurer make fun of the fact that the membership doesn't feel that there is not corruption in our local. And for them to take that stance and joke about it on a podcast, on social media, it's you know, it's amazing to me that they've forgotten their oath. And, you know, we cannot be prepared for what's coming down against the Teamsters with AI and all of the new technology if we can't guarantee our membership fair representation and fair democratic elections. We have to be very aware of what we're presenting to the companies and to our membership also. They work for us and they need to answer to us.
And a strong membership is critical. If you don't have a strong membership that trusts their union, that believes in their union, and is honest about what's going on in the union, every union has problems. There's no union that doesn't have problems, but you've got to be honest and you've got to deal with the problems. If you don't, you've got a serious systemic problem. And I think that's what we have in these various locals. This is a historic, this meeting, actually, where all these locals are coming together around the issue of AI, around the issue of democracy, membership control, and accountability. That has never happened before in this manner. And I think that that's an important meeting. So our next speaker is Barry Anderson, is a member of Teamsters Local 856. He's an activist and rap artist, and his music plays a big part in his activism, critiquing the social structure and educating the masses on how to organize and bring solutions to the table, exposing corruption. Welcome, Barry.
My name is Barry Anderson, out of Sacramento, California, a member of Local 856 out of San Francisco. Originally, I was a member of Local 601, but a couple of years ago, we merged with 856. Like Mrs. Elster said, I'm a rap artist and activist. My music is based on class struggle. I go by Apostle B.A. Abide on various social media platforms, Apple, Spotify. If you're willing to be edified and to enjoy good music, provoking consciousness and class struggle and mass militancy and organizing. As a Teamster, I'm united with other comrades here, and I've heard about the situation concerning Unilec and certain elections. It's very disappointing to hear that this company was not registered at the time or did not have a license, rather. So that's very concerning. And there's a question I would ask is, are other locals outside these locals that have been affected, are they doing the same thing? That's a cause for concern. So my concern is that we continue to inform people and to make this a class struggle issue. When union workers or just workers, period, are being disrespected by their leadership and not being recognized, that is a major issue when it comes to class. Unfortunately, our labor leaders are cowards and they've sold out to the elite or to our politicians who are doing the bidding of corporations and the elite class. So I'm a radical. I'm here to fight for the struggle when it comes to the working class and the poor masses. And this is bigger than just a union election for me. This is a life. This is life. This is class struggle. I'm also a member of the United Front for Labor Party, but I'm here to fight against corruption with various other brothers and sisters in this union struggle.
So our next speaker is Norman Saceda, a proud 10-year member of Teamsters Local 542. Norman previously served 3 years as a shop steward, where he represented his coworkers, helped enforce the contract, and stood up for the rights of the members on the shop floor. He is also involved in the grassroots movement, Members for Members, a group focused on educating the membership and holding union leadership accountable to the members they serve. Welcome, Norman.
Our strength as Teamsters has never came from the top. It's always been and always will be from the members. And the strength, in order for it to continue, it lies within the rules that govern our union. They always have to be fair, transparent, and neutral for every member. That's why the conversations about our Teamsters Constitution, that matters. A lot of our members are ignorant to the fact that we even have a constitution, and those are the rules that govern our leaders. And I think that's by design. That's not by an accident. I had to attend numerous general membership meetings in order to understand what the constitution and bylaws were, instead of the leadership saying, hey, we have constitutions, we have bylaws. And that's because those are the rules that govern our leaders. Those are the rules that they have to follow. Just like we have our collective bargaining agreements when we go to work and how we're held accountable, that's how they're held accountable. So when we look at our constitution, there's two articles personally that I see that stand out. It's Article 22, and that governs our elections and how they're held. It requires, you know, secret ballots. It allows the local union executive boards to determine the procedures and the voting methods used in those elections. Article 19 governs the trials and appeals for those elections. It establishes how the charges are filed and how disputes within the protests within the union and how they're reviewed. But under the current structure, when charges are filed, they go to the same local union executive board that the charges are against and that the members are running against. When that same structure controls the initial review and the disputes, many of the members, they don't believe that the process is truly neutral from the beginning. And therein lies the issue within the membership, losing faith in the system that they're supposed to have trust in. And that's why members are calling for the constitutional reform to strengthen our constitution, the Articles 22 specifically and 19. So the elections and the internal process are clearly fair and impartial. That's why it matters who we're sending as delegates to the International Brotherhood of Teamsters 2026 convention. Because in that convention, that's where the delegates from across the country can propose amendments to the constitution and fight for reform and give the power back to the members where it belongs. Delegates who will, we need to send delegates who will stand up for fair elections, you know, hold our leadership accountable and fight for stronger rules that protect our union democracy. And when we send those delegates, we end up giving the power back to the rank and file members. And that matters more now than ever, seeing that we're having this systemic problem with these election issues, you know, across California. And it seems that it's just an issue as a whole within our Teamsters union. And at the same time, we're dealing with other issues across the country. Businesses are already using automation and, you know, artificial intelligence that threaten jobs across the country. So our union must remain strong, strong in its democracy and strong in defending the livelihoods of all the hardworking Teamsters across country. Because at the end of the day, the goal is simple: to have fair rules, to have an equal voice, and put the power back into the members' hands where it belongs. Because strong members build a strong union, the rules are fair, and the members have the power, the Teamsters become unstoppable. Thank you.
I want to thank you and all of you who are here tonight. I think this is a critical discussion that we've had and reports on what's going on. We need to do this throughout this country. All working people have to be involved in this. And we, I think, are leading the way. I would like to see this kind of event happening in every state, every community, because we're all involved. And I think with the technology, the communication technology, we can use it while we can to educate ourselves, to build solidarity.
That was Steve Zeltser from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltser, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net. And for the latest information on the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, you can always find them at teamster.org.
The tables are starting to turn. I'm talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh, no. Talking about a revolution, oh, no. Talking about a revolution, oh, no.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
In our next offering this morning, Working Voices contributor Peter Ross brings this, in their own words, exclusive from Ada Ashuri, who is running for Los Angeles City Attorney.
Ida Ashuri, and I'm running for Los Angeles City Attorney. I've been a human rights activist for more than 25 years. I'm an Iranian American, and I'm also a former immigrant rights attorney, housing rights attorney, and I used to work as well in the LA and San Diego City Attorney's offices too. And my goal of my campaign in my office is actually to bring the power back to the people, to the renters, to the immigrants, to the workers. And to do that, we have to change the office, transform it, so it's actually going after slumlords, so it's helping workers, so it's providing Know Your Rights information, so it's connecting directly with people on the ground that are suffering, that is holding politicians accountable, that are, you know, causing ethical violations, that are holding our police accountable, that are continuing to commit misconduct, and it's holding our city accountable for continuing to approve mass surveillance. We just connect, just a pathway for ICE raids, and a pathway for more punitive measures against protesters, and giving organizations like Palantir and whatnot, more power as well. So that's my platform, and I am the pro-Palestine activist, anti-Zionist as well as I believe in us divesting from, the genocide, divesting from these oil companies that are destroying our environment. And that's a big thing that the city can do. St. Louis did this already. If St. Louis, Missouri can do this, why can't Los Angeles, California? As a child, I actually was born in Iran. Some of my first memories were actually hiding from U.S.-made bombs and during the Iraq-Iran war, and seeing those little girls that were blown up by U.S.-made bombs triggered those memories, and I don't want any child to go through that. And seeing now, people in my country being blown apart, the buildings, the beautiful architecture there being destroyed. Iran has some of the most beautiful architecture, a 15th century palace being bombed, hospitals being bombed, ambulances being bombed. It's just horrific, and it's something that it was a nightmare that I've carried my entire life, because I was raised, in this country with all this anti-Iranian propaganda, anti-Muslim propaganda. And, what happened today did not happen overnight, didn't happen just because of Trump. It's because there's manufactured consent that's been happening over years. And that's why when they asked the Democrats, their opinion about what happened, they didn't say, we shouldn't be bombing a sovereign country, period. They said, Iran is our number one enemy, and we should be taking them out, but not in this way. Like, that is not a real response, and that is not real opposition to what's happening. And that's why the Democrats are a failure at holding the Republicans accountable, because there's very little separating the two when it comes to foreign policy. And so I am here to speak about that, but also to represent as a candidate with the Peace and Freedom Party. And also, I'm the only candidate not aligning myself with pro-genocide, pro-war actors, which other candidates in this race are aligning themselves with pro-genocide, pro-war people. And that is typical, of Democrats, I would say, but especially in this race where there's already both candidates have raised $500,000, which you cannot do when you are a real grassroots candidate. I think this is happening because Israel has been acting with impunity, and it assassinated the head of state, Khamenei, and many people in the government. And again, that's with impunity. And it did this without, it doesn't matter the law, but you're not supposed to kill people in other countries, especially the leaders of that government, just because you disagree with them, even if you think that they did something wrong. There's countries in that region like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Jordan that have jailed and murdered and executed people for dissent in their countries, and the U.S. is giving them tons and tons of money. And the difference is this country has no U.S. military bases and is not allowing, is not opening its markets up to the U.S. and allowing, again, British Petroleum to control its resources. And that's the only difference between what's happening now. And that's why it's so disingenuous what the United States is doing and lying about them trying to save the Iranian people, because you don't save people by killing them. And I think it's important to note that a lot of the tactics that Israel did in Palestine are repeating in Iran, in the sense that they did what's called a double tap, where they bombed one place, and then when aid workers came in, they bombed it again, which is the most horrific, horrific thing that someone can do. What vile, unhuman, disgusting thing to do, to kill people who are trying to save other people's lives. They've killed 5 Red Crescent workers who are trying to help people. And I think that's absolutely abhorrent, and we should in no way support or align ourselves with this government.
That was a Working Voices, in their own words, exclusive from L.A. City Attorney candidate Ida Ashuri, brought to us by contributor Peter Ross. For more information about Ida Ashuri, you could find it on our website at Ida, A-I-D-A, 4, that's number 4, LA.com.
'Cause nowhere is safe in this world of change. Consent is manufactured through bigotry and rage, so billionaires and fascists can rule without a fight. But the will can be broken if the people unite. But the will can be broken if the people unite.
This is Gary Oldman. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
Power in a factory, power in the land. Power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
In our next segment, Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United Radio interviews special guest Emily Wu Trong, who speaks on mental health in the United States and mental health advocacy.
Welcome to Spanish United Radio. I'm your host, Enrique Sanchez. Tonight, we have a special guest. Can you introduce yourself, please, to the audience?
Yes, my name is Emily Wu Trong.
So explain a little bit about your background and what you do and how you are a mental health advocate.
Okay, so I've been a mental health advocate for over 10 years, inspired by Congresswoman Judy Chu's husband, Mike Eng, when he was still an assembly member for the San Gabriel Valley. I now call myself a rainbow grief artist because grief is so heavy that I have to balance it out with rainbows. There's so many things to be sad about. I lost my father in September 2022, and like, it was a surprise when he died, because we weren't expecting it. And my heart went into a very dark, deep place. Even though I'm like a suicide prevention advocate, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you won't have thoughts of suicidal ideation. And one night, that's where my mind went, and I called 988, the National Suicide Hotline, which too many mental health organizations promote. And I try to warn people that, hey, be cautious of calling 988, because they could call 911 on you, and the first responders will show up. and they will place you in a psychiatric incarceration against your will, basically placed in healthcare facilities like your local ER hospital, a psychiatric ward. You'll be placed in a 5150, and while you're inside, they won't listen to you. They will dehumanize you. You will not have any constitutional rights.
Is that similar to a 5150?
That is a 5150, yes.
Oh, okay, okay.
The California law enforcement code for when you are a danger to yourself or to others. But I think that policies need to change so that we can, individuals who do not have a background of violence are not treated like a person who is violent when they're not going to do any harm to anybody. But people in the hospital are scared of them because they just watch them like a dog in a cage, like, and observing them to make sure that they're not trying to kill themselves. So,
Yeah, I know that right now, especially with the economical, political, and social climate right now, ever before, mental health is becoming a concern because many people who don't have access to mental health or don't know where to get mental health, you know, properly. Like in many cases, when people are having a mental breakdown, law enforcement goes first. And in many cases, sadly, many of those people end up getting killed. So in your case, like, how do you think law enforcement could better handle cases of mental health crises?
Well, first of all, I wish that the police were not ever called because the way they informed me that I was being 5150'd was at the entrance of the ER after the paramedics decided to arbitrarily take me to my local ER. And there's no due process. It's just like, So the news is that as of last week, I wrote an email to the Arcadia fire chief, and because it was the night of my 5150 on July 29, 2023, the Arcadia Fire Department and the Arcadia Police Department showed up, and they were all men. And in this email I sent to the fire department, the fire chief, I also CC'd the five city council members for the city of Arcadia. And I asked them, the fire chief, some questions regarding the bill, the emergency ambulance bill that they were still sending me since November of this past year. I'm like re-traumatized just by receiving the bills and for $474.74. And because I just didn't want to pay it because it's like, this was an involuntary hospitalization. I didn't want it. And then on top of it, I was mistreated. And so like in the email, I asked a bunch of questions, some questions that I got from a lawyer friend up north. And then I added my own concerns as well. I wrote like, do you know if SGB Cares still exists in the city of Arcadia? Because they were absent. Now, SGB Care is one of the San Gabriel Valley Council of Governments. They created their own like mental health unarmed crisis response team to talk to the homeless, to people who are having emotional distress. So I specifically made a request in my email of the city of Arcadia creating their own formal presentation of what are the existing mental health crisis response teams that exist servicing the city of Arcadia. I don't want what happened to me to happen to someone else. I'm not the type to file lawsuits, but when injustice is done to you, you can't just accept it. And so that's why as a psychiatric survivor and someone who believes in civil rights, like I believe in moving and shaking the system so that it can change.
If you really look at mental health, like compared to other developed countries, the United States is the only developed country in the world where its mental health industry, or should I say it's mental health for its citizens, ranks at the bottom of the list. And a lot of that can be changed. You know, we do have the resources, but I just feel that the policies that are being put in place, you know, are not assisting the people in need. And as you know, the healthcare system in general is not universal. It's for profit. And that's something that needs to eventually change. There needs to be more resources put into healthcare because, like I mentioned, too many Hispanic people that are going through mental health crisis are not criminals. They either have a substance abuse or alcohol abuse or whatever. And many of these people, if they don't get killed, they end up in the prison system and they become another statistic within the system. So after African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans are the second largest incarcerated group in the country, primarily because of, you know, the criminalization of mental health. So I feel that our leaders need to be aware that when someone is sent to prison, not because they committed a crime, but just because they're having a mental breakdown, it destroys not only that person's family, it destroys the community, and it destroys the economy of that community. And that's something that we need to prevent as much as we can.
Yeah. Here's the thing. What the system does not promote enough of: peer support, community, because there are free support groups that do exist out there talking about various types of things. Like today, I joined a support group for psychiatric survivors based in Massachusetts, the Wildflower Alliance. So, and then another group that I sometimes go to is like this writing group that meets on Zoom. And they're also based on the East Coast. They're called the Mad Writing Collective. And I've been a featured writer for that website, where I also shared my story of being 5150'd by 988 and how I had a terrible conversation with a nurse who was like, she was so rude to me. She was the one who took away my phone without telling me why. Also had the audacity to throw away my breakfast, and my husband's right there and visiting. And she's like, oh, you'll get your lunch soon enough after. And so, and then the next day, so I write in my article, in my writing on men, women in the attic, she asked me, so what do you do for a living? And I don't really make money doing this, but I also sometimes also say I'm a suicide prevention advocate. And she's like, then what are you doing here? I didn't want to die. I didn't want to die by cop just for wanting to walk home that night. And like you said, people who have emotional meltdowns can oftentimes, including people with autism, can often be killed by officers, police, for just because police don't understand how to interact with an individual with these conditions, you know?
Correct.
And it's just, they're not equipped. They're not equipped to handle those situations. So they technically should not be the ones called upon to handle this. And it's like, because they don't, they're just like, their protocol is like, okay, go check them to the ER.
I mentioned in many countries, they have both. They have law enforcement and they have mental health crisis prevention, where they do have law enforcement and a mental health professional that goes to handle a call to try to prevent a mental health crisis from getting out of control. But unfortunately, in the United States, you know, the law enforcement academies, aside from they're not trained, in many cases, they just don't care.
Yeah. They don't know, they've never heard of these stories, or these stories are not shared enough, or, you know, they don't even bother to ask, you know, what happens to a person when they're taken inside the healthcare system who actually doesn't really know how to handle the situation, because they make all these assumptions, and then they believe what they're doing by the book is good for the patient when they don't even ask the patient what their needs are.
And I do believe that, again, unless we as a community, we try to pressure our leaders to make reforms, I just don't see the healthcare, I mean, not the healthcare, the mental health system changing. And I feel that over time, you know, people are going to get worse. And I feel that it's in the long run becomes unsustainable. And I feel that it's very important that we need to make a mental health a national priority, and also a national security priority as well. It's very important for social, economic, and political stability for the country as a whole.
I think part of mental health, though, is also working to build community, because I feel that so many people are living in isolation. It's so easy for people to feel lonely in our country. And the news makes us easily distrust people and not reach out to a neighbor to say, hello, how are you? And it's, we're so disconnected, but it's like, no, there is medicine in being with community, finding people that align with your value system. You know, because for me, growing up in a community where I just didn't feel like I fit in, I wanted to talk about the meaning of life. But when people are only talking about surface level things, like, and caring about, like, looking good and making lots of money, and I feel like community is what makes life more meaningful. When you have those friendships, when you have those people who make your life better, the quality of your life better, not because someone is paid to do it, like be your, you know, your companion. The community friendships feel disconnected. I think that's how people have not very good mental health.
In the United States, it's unique because, you know, we're focused more on individualism and making money than about having a sense of community or living in an egalitarian society. So I think that's one of the reasons why mental health tends to be worse over here than in other countries.
Yeah. I have lived in Santiago, Chile, para 4 meses after college, and I enjoyed being able to use my high school Spanish after college. And yeah, allá yo tomé un programa para enseñar inglés como segundo idioma.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, when I met the Chilean people there, like, I called up one of my friends on a landline, and the parents picked up, and the father was, like, so kind, and he was, like, he never met me, has never seen my face, and yet he calls me mija. I'm like, wow, that's so, like, affectionate in words, you know, and I really like that.
California is not perfect, but at least, you know, there's more of one's people, especially if you are a person of color. Well, anyway, Emily, we've come to the end of our time, but again, I want to tell you, thank you so much for being a guest on our show. And for all of our listeners listening on Spanish United Radio, we are on Spanish United, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, unknown as X. We are on YouTube. We are a nonprofit organization. You know, no one should be made to feel like a prisoner on their account of their mental health. You know, that's my word of advice to those that are going through mental health. And you've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you, Enrique. Glad to be here. Thank you.
was Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United. For more interviews, videos, and information from Enrique Sanchez, you can go to his Spanish United YouTube channel, or you can find him at the Spanish United website. And for more information from Emily Wu Trong, you can find it on her YouTube channel.
What our labor is worth, that's why we often in the days on the way to our work, and when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
This is Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr with this morning's Working Voices Update. You know, this show is based here in L.A. because as Hollywood writers prepare for contract negotiations with major studios, one topic remains front and center: the role of artificial intelligence. On Friday, the Writers Guild of America released a list of contract demands, which 97% of union members support. Though some details have yet to be revealed, many of the union's demands involve improved health coverage and expanding protections over the use and/or abuse of AI, in addition to higher residuals, which were central issues in strikes by actors and writers in 2023. WGA's current contract, which expires May 1st, established that AI isn't a writer and nothing it produces is considered literary material. It prohibits companies from giving writers AI-generated scripts for a rewrite fee or requiring writers to use AI software, and a company must disclose whether any written materials were developed using AI. And the union says its current AI demands are to simply expand the 2023 protections, where other priorities include increasing contributions to the WGA benefit plans, raising minimums for page one rewrites, and boosting streaming residuals. The Screen Actors Guild of America, Federation of Television and Radio Artists, has identified similar issues as it negotiates a new contract for actors. Last week, SAG-AFTRA and the bargaining group for the major studios disclosed that they are extending their negotiations as their contract expires June 30th and is expected to propose what it has called the Tilly Tax, which is a fee that studios would have to pay to the union in exchange for using an AI actor. This demand is in response to the first AI actor, Tilly Norwood, being introduced to Hollywood, and the fears of AI-generated characters taking jobs is real for many actors. The Tillybots creator, Jikoya, also recently announced the expansion of its AI actor universe called the Tillyverse. So WGA's negotiations are set to start later this morning and will be led by Ellen Stutzman. The studio will be represented by the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, new president, Gregory Hessinger. And more on this story as those negotiations progress. In healthcare news, one California lawmaker wants healthcare for undocumented immigrants brought back. You see, only two Democratic lawmakers voted against Governor Gavin Newsom's budget proposal last year that cut most healthcare for undocumented immigrants, and State Senator Marina Elena Durazo was one of them. Now the senator from Los Angeles is proposing legislation that would reverse many of those immigrant health care cuts and reinstate Medi-Cal eligibility for all income-qualifying residents regardless of citizenship. Senate Bill 1422 would ensure that all immigrant adults aged 19 and older could enroll in Medi-Cal. Senator Durazo argues that working immigrants, even without legal status, contribute billions in tax dollars each year, and many of them now cannot benefit from programs those dollars support. But whether or not Governor Gavin Newsom, a man looking to bolster his U.S. presidential profile, will sign such a measure is unclear, but seemingly unlikely. Struggling with the deficit for the fourth straight year, even as revenues grow, Gavin Newsom has already proposed cuts to other programs. So Marissa Saldivar, a spokesperson for the governor, said his office would not comment on Durazo's legislation. His January budget proposal made few changes to the state's Medi-Cal program, which enrolls more than 14 million Californians, but it underscored the ongoing fiscal challenges. One major threat comes from Donald Trump's immigrant-hostile policies and federal tax reform package, which imposed new limits on the provider taxes that nearly every state uses to support their low-income healthcare programs. Even as Medi-Cal spending has nearly doubled to $200 billion during Newsom's two terms, adding to the state's structural deficit. That amount includes about $119 billion in federal dollars. And both Democrats and Republicans criticize Newsom's handling of health care for immigrants without legal status. Republicans blame Newsom's gradual expansion of Medi-Cal eligibility to immigrants for the program's growing costs. Democrats are angry he partially reversed course, and some also take issue with his most recent budget proposals, which they say would needlessly extend some federal Medicaid cuts. Assemblymember Mia Bonta, a Democrat from Oakland, has introduced a bill that would bar the state from imposing federal work requirements on enrollees whose health care is paid for solely with state funds. A group that includes immigrants without legal status, state officials estimate work requirements will cause roughly 2 million Californians to lose Medi-Cal largely due to administrative hurdles. But either way, the fight over health care spending has become one of the defining issues heading into this fall's elections. The state's largest healthcare labor union is pushing a billionaire's tax to raise revenue for healthcare, a measure that has drawn opposition from California's Silicon Valley wealthy elite and alarmed California's Democratic Party establishment. Meanwhile, party leaders are also trying to unseat a number of vulnerable congressional Republicans, including Representative Dave Valadao, whose working-class Central Valley district has the highest share of Medicaid recipients in the country. And that's our show for this week. And it should come as no surprise that we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to step up and stand in solidarity with our Working Voices show by seriously considering underwriting this show. Because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please, contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. And of course, we need to hear from you, so you can email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. And please, contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. This is Hal Orr with my co-host Reggie Wong, wishing Joe Ayala a great vacation. With our thanks to Steve Zeltzer, Enrique Sanchez, Dan McCrory, Gary Scott, Pete Ross, and all our guests. We're in this together. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a great working week, everyone.
I got work, baby. Got work to do. I got a gig. Got work to do. I got work to do. Got so much work, yeah, yeah.
KPFK 90.7 FM honors the voices that refuse to be silenced. In celebration of Women's History Month, we're opening the vaults. Join us every Monday in the month of March from 1 to 2 p.m. as we dive deep into the Pacifica Radio archives. From the radical grassroots organizers of the 60s to the poets and visionaries who reshaped our culture, we're bringing you the authentic sounds of women making history. These are the recordings that captured a movement uncensored, unfiltered, and uniquely KPFK. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Honor the past, inspire the future. KPFK 90.7 FM, radio powered by the people.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman of the Bradcast, heard right here on KPFK, Mondays at 3 p.m. As you know, KPFK is corporate-free, listener-supported radio. But that means we need you to support our work and help drastically shorten our fund drives by joining the KPFK Sustainers Circle today. You can pledge $5, $10, $20, or any amount you like, automatically collected each month to help keep the broadcast and all of the other KPFK shows on the air. Please go to kpfk.org and click Make a Pledge to join the Sustainers Circle and help keep KPFK's important, independent voice.